Welcome back to the deep dive. So today we're doing something a little unusual. I want you to mentally fast forward with me. Okay. Imagine it's January 2026.
A hypothetical future.
Exactly. And for the sake of this discussion, we're assuming that Deltarune chapters 3 and 4 have, finally dropped.
After all this time.
We're stepping into that future to look at a stack of raw, unfiltered discussion threads from one of the most chaotic anonymous image boards on the internet.
That's quite the experiment. We're essentially analyzing a ghost of the future to understand the present. We're looking at a snapshot of the Toby Fox fan base deep in the release cycle. And frankly, the atmosphere in these threads is, well, it's intense.
Intense is the polite way to put it. I mean, we're talking about thousands of comments that go from brilliant literary analysis to just absolute unhinged conspiracy theories.
Total chaos.
But the mission for this deep dive is to cut through all that noise and answer a single burning question that just dominates these threads. How does Toby Fox keep winning?
It really is the central mystery, isn't it? You look at the indie game landscape, and it's littered with one-hit wonders or developers who completely imploded. But Toby Fox, I mean, a decade after Undertale, is still sitting on the throne.
Exactly. And the users in these threads are obsessed with figuring out why. So we're going to dissect the secret formula to his stardom, the bizarre culture war being fought over his silence, and the specific terrifying lore theories that in this hypothetical 2026 are tearing the community apart.
Okay, so just a heads up for you listening. We are analyzing anonymous image board culture.
Right.
The language in the source material is harsh. The cynicism is, like, off the charts. And the spoilers for this hypothetical release are heavy.
So buckle up. Let's start with the big picture. The thread opens with a user asking a very blunt question.
Oh, yeah, saw that one.
How did Toby Fox succeed and achieve massive multimillionaire indie success where his contemporaries failed? And they start naming names, the developers of WYAC, the Lisa games.
Right. Games that were indie darlings for a minute and then just fell off the map or became punchlines. Why is Toby different?
And the first answers are just incredibly cynical. There's a loud faction in the thread that says it's all down to what they call pandering.
They use much cruder language for it, of course. Lots of 4chan specific slang.
Oh, for sure. But the core argument is that Toby cynically engineered his game to capture the furry and, the LGBTQ plus demographics.
And they bring up Andrew Hussey, the creator of Homestoke, as a comparison,
They
right?
do, which is a fascinating parallel.
The argument goes that Hussey pandered to similar groups, but eventually, I don't know, alienated them or just got too messy. These users claim Toby captured the furry dollar more effectively. There's a quote here. It says, "Pandering to furries is what made Toby successful."
It just implies the whole thing is a marketing gimmick.
It does.
But that feels way too reductive. I mean, if it were that easy, every indie game would just throw in a goat mom and become a millionaire,
Right. There has to be something else, a mechanic behind this longevity. It goes deeper than just character design.
And that's where the thread pivots to the most compelling theory in this entire stack.
The Toby engine.
The Toby Engine. I love the name. I saw the chart they referenced. It literally says, do nothing, win.
It sounds like a meme, but they're analyzing it like it's a legitimate business strategy. The Toby engine theory posits that his greatest asset is his absence.
He stays off Twitter.
He stays off Twitter. He avoids podcast appearances. He doesn't weigh in on the drama of the day.
Which is the polar opposite of the WYAC developers, or even someone like Notch, who are infamous for, let's say, never stopping posting.
Precisely. The thread is full of postmortems on other indie devs who ruin their own reputations by getting into Twitter discourse. The users argue that silence is a strategic superpower. By saying nothing, Toby avoids all the traps that kill other careers. He just releases the game, posts a funny dog GIF, and then vanishes for 2 years.
It creates a vacuum. If you don't give people anything to be mad at, they just have to focus on the game.
But the fans fill that vacuum with their own meaning. And there's another layer to this they mentioned, something they call threading the autism needle.
Okay, unpack that one. That sounds highly specific.
It is, but in the context of these threads, it's actually meant as a compliment to his writing.
Really?
The theory is that Toby writes characters that resonate really deeply with neurodivergent people, specifically those on the autism spectrum, without it feeling patronizing or, cringe.
I see.
A user argues that other devs try to do this and it comes off as exploitative or stereotypical. With Toby, it feels native. It It respects the emotional sensibilities of that demographic.
So the consensus is a mix of genuine quality. He's actually a good writer and musician, and this sort of first mover advantage.
Right. Undertale hit at the perfect moment, and because he just shuts up and lets the work speak for itself, he doesn't give anyone ammunition to take him down. For now. But as we see later in the threads, that silence is, it's a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
Because when you don't tell people who you are, they decide for you.
Which brings us to the culture war section of this deep dive. This is where the silence gets weaponized. Because Toby doesn't speak on political issues, the source material suggests he's become this massive Rorschach test for the entire internet.
It's the central paradox of the Deltrum fanbase, for sure. In the very same thread, you have one group screaming that the game is woke slop because of non-binary characters and queer themes.
Mm-hmm.
But then three comments down, you have users arguing that Deltarune is actually right-wing coded.
Otaku-centrist was the term they used, which might be my new favorite oxymoron.
That's a fascinating mental gymnastic. The argument is that the game relies heavily on traditional RPG tropes, you know, themes of angels, churches, nuclear families.
Right.
Some users claim Toby respects the conservative Christian player because he treats these religious themes with a kind of reverence, unlike a lot of modern media that deconstructs or mocks them.
So the argument is basically the game is traditional. The fans are the ones making it woke.
Exactly. There's a comment that says, and I'm paraphrasing, his writing respects the conservative Christian player while his fandom makes up expletive.
Wow.
They believe Toby is secretly based, you know, internet slang for anti-woke
mm-hmm.
because he maintains friendships with controversial figures like Andrew Hussey or Omicat.
It's just bizarre to watch them dissect his silence on issues like BLM or ICE detention centers. They're debating whether his silence makes him a secret ally to the right or just a smart businessman.
Yeah. Who knows that buying ink by the barrel is a bad idea? And this all ties back to the concept of parasocial protection.
Okay.
The source material suggests that fans are so emotionally dependent on Toby, they see him as a best friend who helped them through depression or hard times, that they just refuse to cancel him.
Even when he associates with people they might hate, they give him a pass.
Yes. But there's a very cynical prediction in the thread. This immunity has an expiration date. One user predicts that as long as Deltarune is unfinished, people mentally cannot bring themselves to turn on him. They need the ending. They need that dopamine hit.
But once Chapter 7 drops,
the prediction is that his social stock will plummet. Once the product is delivered, the parasocial contract is fulfilled. Then the fan base will look at his silence, look at his friends, and the cannibalization will begin.
That's a bleak outlook. It suggests the fandom isn't built on love, but on a transaction.
Give me the lore and I'll ignore your politics.
Eh?
For now.
It turns the artist into a content vending machine.
As long as the snacks keep coming, nobody kicks the machine.
Well, speaking of the snacks, let's shift gears to the product itself. In this 2026 timeline, chapters 3 and 4 are out, and the lore discussions in these threads are just absolute chaos.
Unfiltered is the word. They're dissecting what they call the church dark world.
Specifically, I was struck by the obsession with Gerson, the old turtle shopkeeper from Undertale who's dead in Deltarune, and Father Alvin.
The Gerson's hammer debate is a prime example of how granular this community gets.
Mm-hmm.
The question is Gerson's smithing hammer buried in his grave, or is it hidden in Father Alvin's desk?
Okay, so for the uninitiated, why does the location of a dead turtle's hammer matter so much?
Because of the mechanics of the knight.
Hmm.
The leading theory in the thread is that the knight needs specific objects with emotional resonance to create dark fountains.
Ah.
So if Alvin has the hammer, he might be working with the knight. Or, darker still, the knight used the prophecy to ensure the hammer would be there.
I saw a line in the source that said, the knight is not blindly following the prophecy, they are making the prophecy come true.
It implies active manipulation of the timeline. It suggests the villain isn't just opposing the heroes, but orchestrating their entire journey.
Wow.
But Alvin isn't the only suspect. We have to talk about the phone voice and Carol Holiday.
Noelle's mother. The mayor.
The users are analyzing text colors again, the famous red text, usually associated with high-threat entities like Chara or Flowey. Apparently, in this released version of Chapter 4, Carol uses red text when she says, "You are welcome here anytime."
Oh, and she comes home early, right when Susie gets the guitar weapon.
That's the claim. The timing makes her a prime suspect for being the voice on the phone that Chris and the player's been interacting with.
So she's the knight.
Well, typical of these threads, half the users think she is, and the other half think she's a red herring designed to distract us from the real threat.
And speaking of threats, We need to address the weird route. For those who don't know, this is the genocide equivalent in Deltarune, a path where you manipulate characters into lethal action.
Mm-hmm.
And the source material implies something horrific happens in Chapter 4 involving Carol.
It's the Snowgrave spell again. But this time, the target isn't a random enemy or a minor rival like Birdly. The threads are implying Noelle uses it on her own mother.
On Carol. That is incredibly heavy.
It is. Users are describing it as the ultimate teenage rebellion, destroying the controlling parent to break the cycle.
So it fits the theme.
Totally. If the normal route is about fulfilling the prophecy and saving the world, the weird route is about shattering the prophecy and destroying the world to save yourself.
That would be incredibly dark, even for Toby. It implies the player is essentially grooming Noelle into a patricide.
And it fuels the meta theory that the game is trying to hurt the player, to punish them for seeking out these alternate paths and pushing the boundaries of the code.
Which leads us right into the theory wars. Because if the game is pushing back, the fans are pushing harder. So in 2026, the Chris is the Knight theory seems to be dead.
It seems so, yeah. The new chapters apparently confirm Chris isn't the Knight. But look at the mental gymnastics in the thread.
Oh, I saw this.
The Chris Knighters, the people who bet their reputation on that theory, they're not admitting defeat. They've pivoted to Chris is a traitor working with the Knight.
They're moving the goalposts.
Always. You can never be wrong on the internet. But a new, more terrifying theory has taken hold. The Amalgam Knight.
This one actually gave me chills reading it. Break it down for us.
It connects back to the true lab in Undertale. Amalgams are monsters injected with determination, which causes them to melt and fuse together.
And we know determination is required to open dark fountains.
Exactly. And the Knight is referred to as it in the text, not he or she.
Oh, right.
So the theory argues the Knight is a shape-shifting, determination-fueled amalgam. It explains the physical strength, the ability to create fountains, the ambiguous identity. It's a biological horror take on the villain rather than just a hidden character take.
That's wild. We also have to touch on the identity politics within the lore itself. The debate over Noelle's gender seems to have reached a boiling point in these threads.
It's the antlers debate all over again. In real biology, female reindeer keep their antlers in winter while males shed them. But in cartoon logic, usually only males have antlers.
So you have one side screaming, transcoding, she has antlers, and the other side screaming, it's just a drawing. Real reindeer have antlers.
And then they bring in the pill bottles found in the Queen's mansion. Are they for HRT or for mental instability? And the source material here is just incredibly aggressive. Users are using these pixel details to fight a proxy war for their own ideologies. It's not really about Noelle anymore. It's about winning the argument.
Which seems to be the primary mode of engagement for this fan base. Winning. Whether it's shipping wars, Cizel versus Cruzy, or lore theories.
And hanging over all of this is the pervasive fear of the blue ball.
The blue ball.
The fear that Toby knows all of this. The shipping, the theories, the obsession. And will end the game with a meta twist that resets everything. No canon ships, no confirmed lore, just a time loop.
Which would be the ultimate Toby engine move. Say nothing, resolve nothing, leave them arguing forever.
You would certainly ensure the threads keep going for another 10 years.
We can't talk about this whole ecosystem without talking about the content creators. The source mentions a YouTuber named Jaru quite a bit.
Oh, Jaru. He seems to be the archetype of the mad prophet in this community. The users mock him relentlessly for his wilder theories.
Like what?
Things like, Des is the red soul. Or Asriel is Ralsei. They call it schizobabble.
But they watch him. They quote him.
They watch him, and they grudgingly respect him. You know why?
Why?
Because he apparently predicted Dusknur Gersen.
Dusknurs? That's a fun word.
Darkners created from monster dust. It's a very specific mechanics prediction. And because he got that one right, the users feel compelled to listen to his other, crazier theories just in case he's right again.
It's a cycle, isn't it? They hate the speculation, but they're addicted to it.
One user in the thread captures this perfectly. They complain that the discussion is rotted. They call the other users ship-obsessed and trans-investigators. They say the game attracts lunatics like a magnet.
But does Toby attract them, or does he create them?
That is the fundamental question. By refusing to clarify anything, by leaving the antlers ambiguous, by leaving the relationships undefined, by staying silent on Twitter, he creates a sandbox where insanity thrives.
He provides the silence. The fans provide the noise. And looking at these threads, the noise is deafening.
It really is.
Yeah.
And that brings us back to the Toby engine. We asked how he wins. He wins because the engine is a mirror.
The anti-woke fans see a secret conservative.
The progressive fans see a quiet ally.
The theorists see a puzzle. The shippers see a romance. Everyone sees what they want to see because Toby Fox refuses to turn on the lights and show them what's actually in the room.
But the game has to end. That's the big takeaway from these 2026 threads. The engine runs on anticipation. It runs on the not yet.
When Chapter 7 hits, the mirror breaks. The mystery is solved. And if the weird root theories are right, and Toby forces us to destroy the things we love, he might be planning to break the engine himself.
It raises a provocative thought for you listening. We often think of death of the author, the idea that the creator's intent doesn't matter, only the interpretation.
Right.
But here, the author is alive, well, and seemingly holding a detonator.
It's a high-stakes poker game. He's been bluffing or playing it close to the chest for over a decade now.
And the fans are all in.
So here is the question for you listening at home. If you were in his shoes, sitting on a cultural phenomenon with a fan base this volatile, would you speak up? Would you try to correct the record and calm the storm? Or would you trust the engine, stay silent, and let them fight it out until the very end?
I think I'd stay quiet, but I'd definitely stay off the image boards.
Probably the smartest move of all. Thanks for taking this trip to the chaotic future of 2026 with us. We'll see you on the next deep dive.